I'm on the phone with Lara. Lara, look, I just phoned you the other night to say that I'd posted a piece about the death squads killing the parents of a radio operator in El Salvador, an FMLN activist, Mariposa. And then you came back with this story that, or news, more recent news, that some other comrades had fallen victim to death squads in El Salvador.
Yes, indeed. In 13 weeks, in fact, 13 comrades have been politically murdered, as far as FMLN can identify, maybe even a higher number than that, in a country where there is a political policy, if you like, encouraged by this right-wing government that actually not just allows but encourages crimes of violence and disorder. It's hard to identify sometimes which are the political crimes and which are the specific results of the policies being implemented. But in this particular case, there are about 13 comrades identified as having been politically assassinated. As you can imagine, the left and progressive and social movements are up in arms. They're demanding that there be some action about this and that the violence stops. This is a country that fought hard for the peace accords to be won and implemented, and at this particular point I think you could say that El Salvador, the people of El Salvador, are certainly on their feet with the FMLN in a very significant struggle, perhaps the most significant struggle since the end of the Civil War.
See, those are strong words, Lara, and who were the latest victims?
The latest victims were a very well respected couple, Alex Flores Montoya and Mercedes Peñata de Flores, leaders and activists of the FMLN in Coatepeque. They were assassinated in the afternoon, between 4 and 5 p.m. in the afternoon, in a laneway in their street, in the area in which they were local councillors and candidates. They were intercepted by another vehicle, a pickup truck, in the appearances and styles of the death squads of the 80s and 90s, so 80s and early 90s, which is why it's so clearly identified with the resurgence of the death squads.
So they were
also assassinated with one single shot to the head, each of them, and left in the laneway.
So what you're suggesting here, that they're actually trying to identify these crimes with the kind of actions they did in the 70s and 80s, you know, when they were just sort of, well, state-sponsored terrorists. And it's sort of like, you know, it's the old black hand, the mafia, say, we did this. Is this a kind of intimidatory...
Yes, it is, absolutely. I think as you see the FMLN having gained so much strength and consolidated so much of their popular work with the masses in El Salvador, and, you know, it was a big transition, a huge transition that they made, and that they made very successfully from the guerrilla war and the liberation front, the armed liberation struggle, through to the political transformation. That's been an enormous transformation.
It was
a very successful one.
Yep.
But as they've consolidated that base and that popular support, of course, we find the state the only way that they can return to attempting to control it is by the tried and true techniques that they have, and it's a form of, as you said, state-sponsored terrorism, and it's using the police force, it's using army people. These people have been seen in uniform carrying out these crimes. So it's not just paramilitary type appearances, but actually people wearing their uniforms, wearing riot police gear or military combat gear.
And can you tell us more about, you know, some of the victims of this? You said there have been 13 in the last few weeks.
Yes, these are comrades who are actively identified and known in their communities as leaders of the FMLN. Different level, you know, back to, you'll recall, Warwick, I'm sure, during the Civil War, one of the techniques, of course, was to pick off anyone who was publicly identified with the the front in those days, because that campaign of terror, you know, against people to try and dissuade them from acting in accordance with their politics.
You know, like and that's what this, stepping out, yeah.
That's right, and I think this is what this has been about. And just as they did in the 80s, it's not going... Well, in fact, they, I mean, at one stage they... I believe, from memory, assassinated the leadership of the FDR.
That's right.
Yeah, one of the revolutionary groups, pre-runners to the FMLN, were all...
1980, yeah.
The whole Central Committee, I think, was assassinated. But in this case, they haven't gone to the very top, but they've they're picking out leaders that are known and identified in their community and that play a very important role. And it's part of a campaign to terrorise people.
Are you in are you sort of informed enough to be able to tell us what the FMLN and the comrades and the people in El Salvador are doing in response to this kind of intimidation and terrorism?
Certainly. One of the things that they are doing in any forum in which the FMLN participates, and that includes the National Assembly of the country, the National Parliament of the country, and it includes the municipal areas that they govern. Any chance that they get, they are denouncing this violence. They are denouncing the actions of the President of the Republic, who is clearly allowing these situations to happen, who's not taking any steps to address this issue.
Is this right? He hasn't responded to any of these actions? He's sort of since turning his back on it, or what?
Well, since things came to a head in July with the assassination of the parents of Mariposa, the Manzanares couple, an elderly couple brutally murdered, as I think we talked about at the time. Since then, the community in which they lived, their daughters, Mariposa and her sister, and the entire FMLN and popular movements there, the Bloque Popular Social, the popular social bloc, which consists of all the church groups, the trade unions, students groups, all of these groups are demanding a proper investigation, because what's happening is the police are writing these crimes off and saying, another random, you know, violent crime.
It was pretty evident in that crime that it was politically motivated, but yeah let's...
Absolutely. The only things missing from the house that lovely couple were murdered, tortured and murdered in, and a couple of that age. The only thing missing was any items relating to their son, a very well-known political figure, who was also murdered by the regime at the end of the civil war there. So the only things missing from their home was political memorabilia and memorabilia relating to their son's assassination, and all items that were red. I mean, you know, if that's not a mark of a political crime and one of those psychological terror sort of tags that they leave behind from the death squads, then, you know, it's pretty clear to the rest of the population what's happening.
And obviously the President and the police are not prepared to respond to this.
President and the... what they call the press in El Salvador, the mainstream press, along with the president, have done is to, in fact, at the height of the other uprisings that were happening, the student rebellion and the union issues that were happening at the time, the trade union movement was also taking the government through to the Central American or Latin American human rights commissions for violation of trade union organizing rights. And all of that came to a head at about the same time, in which case the central part of San Salvador was actually under a bit of a lockdown and military and police.
Right?
Military and police, they said they were looking for letters with weapons.
The 1980s all over again, in the middle of the Civil War.
Indeed it does.
It's like a state of emergency.
Yes, it was. Well, it was actually a state of emergency. Two members of the police were killed and 20 or so students injured as the National Civil Police opened fire against a passive and peaceful student march.
Yeah.
And yes, it was a very intense few days. But what happened was, the government had snipers and people in place well before that peaceful march. In fact, there are photos showing they were there the night before and what have you. Yet the president went to press straight away, blaming the FMLN for the violence and denying that he had, snipers on the roof. Now, there were press photos from the previous day showing these people in place and waiting, and it seemed fairly clear to most observers that it was a manipulated confrontation and a planned confrontation.
Yeah, and it's a familiar tale, and I think what you're describing about, you're saying 13 FMLN activists, people with a bit of a profile, have been killed with evidence, clear signs, identifying them with the tactics and the techniques of the death squads of the 1970s and 80s, and pretending that it's just random violence. That's a bit blatant.
Your listeners might appreciate some parallels, although we don't see the degree of violence and repression in Australia in this overt physical way. The government of alias Antonio Saka, the right-wing government, and the president, used this state of emergency and this situation that was engineered around these events to introduce new and very severe anti-terrorism laws into their federal parliament.
Oh, dear.
And interestingly, they weren't even able, even though they do govern in a right-wing minority, they form a majority coalition, with other minority right-wing organisations in there, because the FMLN on their own are the single biggest force in the national parliament, but the smaller right-wing groups together in their coalition continue to govern. And interestingly, they couldn't get it through past their own people even, because it was so severe. One of the things they were aiming to do in that legislation was to actually look at declaring the FMLN as a terrorist organisation again. And yet this is a political institute supported directly by more than half of the Salvadoran population in governance around the country.
Yeah, that's a bit like trying to say the Labor Party is a declaring
going by the analogy of a major opposition party.
Yeah,
I suspect they have a bigger membership even than the Australian Labor Party. So
they actually have more representation from the electorate than the Australian Labor Party. That's incredible.
Yes.
And well, it's nice to see that some of their own people have bitten them in the bum the same way as Howard's backbenchers have, but on the
some of these right wingers still have a line that they'll stand behind in terms of democratic representation.
Okay, look, Lara, it's disturbing news, and but it's very informative, and I think very important to people here in Australia who are trying to maintain the struggle.
Yeah, look, I think what's important to keep in mind with all of this is that this is the country, El Salvador, it's got a terrific grassroots struggle happening and a terrific, there are some incredibly positive and wonderful initiatives being implemented on the ground. You know, it's a little bit like saying the liberated zones, for those who remember what the liberated zones were during the war, the areas where the FMLN did have control and were, in conjunction with the revolutionary solidarity from around the world, building hospitals and schools and doing that work. Look, some of that stuff is happening on a day-to-day basis around the country where the municipal governments are run by the FMLN. And if you were born in San Salvador now and you go and get your birth certificate, you know there's an FMLN star on the printed out official.
Cool.
It's a pretty good time to go and get your updated birth records. So there are some great things happening and a great sense of solidarity and community happening in some areas. But there's this overall federal governance which is very much to the right, and, it has to be said exactly what it is. It's Bush's puppet in Central America still.
Yeah.
They've opened the new ILEA, the International Law Enforcement Agency, which is like a school of the Americas, but for police across Latin America. And if listeners in Australia would recall, would just think about the last few weeks' debate around Australian imperialist intervention in East Timor, and the involvement of police as opposed to direct military involvement. And that's the sort of comparison with what the US is doing through El Salvador now, and this this right-wing government there, putting this School of the Americas for Police, the ILEA, installing that in San Salvador, in El Salvador, sorry, to train police agents to disseminate throughout Latin America.
Yeah.
And so, you know, really, this is part of the overall imperialist, anti-imperialist struggle.
Yeah, and it's some of those things that you've mentioned, the work that's been done in the social welfare area, and recognition of the working people's rights is, I think, the fact that the FMLN is still in there and doing it is probably an inspiration to us, and it's good to see the struggle continuing there.
Oh, it is very good. And you know, some of the great work Murray Posa was doing before her parents were killed in her community there was around arts and memory, you know, and creative arts and the collective memory of the population in terms of the war. Because, you know, this right-wing government would like everyone to forget, of course, the crimes and the horrible things that they mandated over, because they want to keep in power and keep this thing going. But, you know, they were doing incredible creative work and very good community building work around creative arts. Mariposa herself is currently out of El Salvador. It's considered the risk is very great for her because these threats were being made against her for some time prior to this. And, you know, that's I guess she's the first publicly identified although she's not got a I don't believe it's a refugee as such. She's travelling at the moment, but you know, it's also
a postmodern refugee status, perhaps sort of a virtual refugee or
something along those lines. However, we will be. It's hoped that we will have the good fortune of a visit to Australia from her sometime in the next few months, and I hope you will talk with her and record an interview at that stage for people, because I think listening to somebody who's directly lived not just the Civil War years and been a terrific leader and activist through those years, but also for the last 13 years or so of Reconstruction. The important item, I guess, is that the FMLN has gone back to the United Nations and Kofi Annan to present a list of claims, if you like, against the government of
this is very important, Laura.
It's a vital point, because the peace negotiations, and I know you will recall every painful detail of those negotiations, that there are two parties to them, the FMLN and representing the people of El Salvador, and the military and government sort of party to it, represented by the current president, I guess. And they have reneged on many, many points of those peace accords consistently. In fact, they've really had to be pushed so hard by the popular movement to implement any part of it.
Yeah.
And revisiting that and going back to the United Nations, I think, is a very interesting step.
Yeah. Well, we'll be watching that very closely. And I hope when Mariposa comes out here, Laura, we might get her up to Nimbin, and we can talk about community radio and alternative radio, because she was a great inspiration to people. She was one of the main announcers there in the guerrilla radio Venceremos, which has become the main media network for the FMLN.
Yes.
Both during and now, during the years of struggle and now. Yes.
There's a very touching and fairly recent, I think it was produced last year, movie as well, focusing on the life of the child during the Civil War. But I think a very poignant part, a thread through that whole movie, is in fact the importance of Radio Venceremos as the voice of the people, the hope and the information. I mean, it was the only way to get information on what was happening. And the rest of the commercial radio stations throughout the country were you know, broadcasting American pop music, and you wouldn't have known there was a problem, and meanwhile people were just being slaughtered everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, she's a terrific inspiration, and we certainly look forward to talking to her when she gets here. Thanks very much, Lara. And
it's a pleasure, and thank you for helping inform people. It's not the sort of thing you're going to read in the Murdoch Press or
this is true.
On your average radio station.
Well, hopefully that's changing now with the internet. I'll just let our listeners know we're talking through computers at the moment, a little piece of software called Skype. So yeah, we can do this kind of thing, and hopefully, you know, we're doing lateral radio rather than hierarchical radio.
Okay.
Lara's in there with it. Thank you, Lara.
A great opportunity for your listeners to get involved if they are able to is of September in Sydney, the Latin American Solidarity Conference.
Yep.
And let's have a look at how we can get some of that material podcast as well so that they can listen.
Yes.
At leisure.
Yep. That's great, Lara.
No worries.
Thank you.